Meet Sven.
Yeah.
He's very excited right now. Sven doesn't play poker, but he's still very excited. You see, Sven is a dealer for Porsche, and he's just found out that PokerStars players earn $7.5 million in VIP points every month. And with our all-inclusive program, that's enough to redeem 5 of the lovely pieces of German engineering every day.
Yeah!
Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to leave other schemes, well, out of commission. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Annie Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's January 14th, 2011, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Hey, wait a minute. Who told you could talk, buddy? We'll get back to that later, but right now I own you, so you.
I
pwn you.
I'm pretty sure you pwned me since we've known each other. So,
what's going on, buddy?
Oh man, well you know I'm really enjoying our forum, AnnieUpMagazine.com/forum.
Yeah.
And the first thing I got to say about it is, if you're out there and you've been listening to the show for a long time, and you're like, man, I really want to like interact with other Annie Uppers, but Annie Up doesn't have any boards. Well, guess what? We do have boards. We just call it the forum. I don't know. Maybe are we a higher class? Because we call it the forum.
I thought you were going to tell us that we had no rebounds.
Yeah, we definitely don't have any rebounds.
Okay, so we don't have rebounds. We just have boards.
When you're all the way on the ground, you can't bounce back up.
So yeah, people are getting confused. They want to know, you know, what's this forum you're talking about, or why don't you have boards?
Yeah, I just got an email from one of our relatively long-time listeners who emails me every once in a while with some tips and advice. And he's like, you know, hey Scott, you know, I'd love to be able to share this stuff with other people and not just bug you about it. You know, I found one of these poker boards out there. You guys really should do this. And so I looked at it, make sure it wasn't anything different. I'm like, you know what? I think this looks kind of like our forum. Have you checked that out? Oh, no. I didn't know about that. This is awesome.
Wow.
And now in there, and he's posting away, and people are helping him, and it's great. So I'm certainly not bringing this up to pick on the poor guy. I'm just saying, wow. I just didn't realize that maybe just the words that we're choosing to describe this might be keeping other people out there who are sitting around thinking the same thing. And we don't want that. We want people in there commingling and sharing their views and getting into fights with me,
and unsubscribing because we're too picky on him when he asks us to be picky on him.
So yes, you know, go to the AnnieUpMagazine.com/forum and sign up. It's free, it's easy, and then boom, you're in, and you're part of the family. And so you know, just want to get that out of the way.
I think we need to create another website. Address, at least URL, just AnnieUpMagazine.com/boards and have a redirect to the forum.
Oh, there we go. Now, don't confuse people, because now people are going to go, hey, I went to AnnieUpMagazine.com/boards and nothing happened, dude.
Well, you're going to have to create that pretty quick then.
Yeah, get that meant. But but once you get your account signed up and you're in there and you're splashing around in the forum, you'll get to start pummeling Scott Long, which is one of the more fun activities that you get to do in the forum, because I put myself out there, Chris.
I know. You know, we really should just create a board that says, here, pummel on Scott. That's the name of the board itself, the forum.
Oh, we do. It's called AnnieUpMagazine.com/forum.
I should get the administrator to create that. That'd be great.
But no, I'm kidding. I'm not trying to start a fight or continue a fight with our good friends on the forum. But I like to get in there and try to, you know, bend a little minds every once in a while. I'm not doing it just to be a jerk, you know. I really believe in the power of the forum to really expand our poker minds. And maybe I'm being a little too what's the word I'm looking for? Hopeful. There's probably a better word, but maybe hopeful is going to do for right now because I can't think of anything else because I didn't prep enough for this this bit.
Well, let me ask you a question, though. I realize I do go in there as well, but a lot of times I'm just posting the recaps and reading rather than getting it and mixing it up like I used to when we used to have just a blog back at the Times. But Right. Are you 100% genuine and sincere with what you're posting, or are you in there just playing devil's advocate having fun?
No, I'm absolutely 100% sincere.
Okay.
And what I do, but I just I think I get this reputation for being a crazy dude. Now, of course, I am crazy. So, you know, I live up to that. But I guess this is why I brought it up on the show today, because this latest thread that's going on, and to be honest, I can't remember what it was about. That's what it was. One of our listeners posted a hand, which is what most people post in the forum. You know, hey, I played this hand. Did I play it right or not? Right.
Right.
Fairly innocuous hand, and lots of people gave him advice. And at the end of the day, we all really agreed in this situation. But here's the thing with me. And I do this on the hand of the week and the one-minute mystery. I don't like just to say, yeah, you need to shove there, or no, you should have folded there. Because to me, that doesn't really help anyone.
Uh-huh.
You know, it answers the question, but it doesn't help you, like, consider the situation and think about it in the deeper, dare I say, philosophical terms. And now I got my new little fan club I call the Binary Bunch all in a tizzy now because I don't like that. They don't like to hear about philosophy. They like to hear about cold hard facts and numbers. But I like to kind of like, you know, peel the layers of the onion away. I don't like just to like, you know, saute the onion and put it on my cheesesteak.
Yeah, I had that Monday night.
Did you?
Yeah, I had cheesesteak grinder on grinder. Sorry, people hear grinder, people think, oh my God, it sounds so painful. Well, that's what we call it up north. But yeah, cheesesteak with the onions. It was great.
Oh, man. Well, you know, the reason it came up is that, you know, people were like, oh, yeah, you got to shove there. You got to shove there. Yeah, you were right to shove there. And I said, you know what? Maybe if you think about this and this and this and this, maybe you won't do this. And then, whoosh. You know, the earthquake and Superman would knock the Hoover Dam down and all the water went rushing down and that's what happened on the forum. People are like, oh my gosh, Scott, how can you not do that? Come on. Jen and Block have done game theory forever and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, all right, so I'm not picking on our folks for their opinions. What I'm saying is I don't get how helpful it is when someone just says, yeah, you should shove there. Rather than say why you need to shove, or to say, you know, in a different situation or blah, 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 you might not.
So what you want is you want to explain to the people, yes, it is right to shove here, but you need to say why is what you're saying. It's not just a matter of numbers. It's a matter of here's the reason, because if you don't shove here, the odds of you getting a better hand in the next rotation, and then your chip stack will be so insignificant that it won't really matter to someone else, and you can't really scare somebody. So that's what you're saying, is you're trying to get a reason behind the answer rather than just a cold, hard answer.
Yes, and in the next step. So to your question, yes, I want people to show their work. Back in third grade when I topped out on my math skills.
Yeah.
And I got called up to the blackboard back when we had chalk and stuff and not these, you know, PowerPoint crap that kids are learning on now. And you do the little division thing and you put the answer down. They're like, yeah, that's great, Scott. But show me your work. I'm like, ah, why? It's right, isn't it? And they're like, yeah, it's right. But I want you to show your work. So, yeah. So I want people to show the work. I don't want them just to say show.
And that was mostly on homework, too, because they didn't want you to go home and use a calculator and then just put your answers
that's
down.
That's true.
They wanted to see that you can chicken scratch your way to the answer.
Right. But then the next step above that is to kind of get into some detail about the information that's missing. All right. And this happens all the time. It doesn't matter, even on the hand of the week, when someone sends us a hand that's got everything written down, you're still, there's still incomplete information in that, right?
Yeah,
we
most
don't
of the time,
know
yeah.
whether the opponent was chasing the dog around the house and the baby's crying, or you know whether it's his first time playing poker or her 20,000th time playing poker. There's all kinds of information
Right.
That you just it's just impossible to put into an email to us for Hand of the Week or in the forum, right?
Right.
And I'm not asking that people do that. But what I think would be helpful is when people say, hey, you should show up here, unless, and they give some reasons, you know, hey, well, you know, if the big blind is this kind of player, blah, 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 then maybe you may. That's the kind of stuff that I think I'm getting to, because I think that helps us in the future, because I really firmly believe that we never see the same hand twice.
It's like a snowflake.
Right? Well, yeah, exactly.
Hands
absolutely.
Are like snowflakes.
And there's snowflakes in 49 of 50 states, not 50, not Florida right now, thankfully. But no, you know, people can say, wow, you know, yeah, well, you're going to get Ace King against Gun. Well, of course you're going to get Ace King again, right? But yeah. It's not going to be the same situation. And I'm like, well, I've got Ace King on the button and the big blind had 7-8 and that happened twice. Well, yeah, okay, that's going to happen again, right? But that situation is not the same as the last time you had, because both players have learned from that last hand, right?
Right.
Some more than others. So the situation is never the same. So to say, hey, this is what you should have done in that hand, I think robs us of an opportunity to learn how to be better in those situations in the future.
So what if there is no, quote, unless, quote? I'm just curious.
There's always an unless, yes.
All right. I think that the Antiup Nation could dream up probably at least 50 examples where there's no unless.
Okay. Well, dream up
I
one.
Challenge them to do it. Come up with an unless that Scott can't.
Don't do that. Now we're gonna get flooded with 4,000 with a binary bunch themselves, man. Let alone everybody else that hates me out there.
I totally agree with you. I think that's the whole point of these boards and forums is to learn. Why are we putting it on there to brag? No, we're putting it on there because we need help. We want to see what other people would do and. Why would they do it that way? Because I did it this way. So if they're doing it that way, and a lot of times you'll find players that you respect or players that are better than you, and that's how you learn. I mean, that's what Jonathan Little said, I think, last week, was something about the way you learn is you find somebody who's better than you, and they tell you what you're doing wrong. So you need to know why you're doing something wrong and learn from it. So I agree with you, totally.
I would also argue you can learn a lot from people that aren't as good as you.
Sure, no, I know, but right. Depends on how you internally work. You may consider others more than others, you know what I mean? You may,
You should, but you know, I mean, no one's the perfect poker player out there.
No, right.
And, you know, if somebody has a new little trick that you haven't heard of or a new way of looking at it, that's going to help your game. You may say, oh, that's hogwash and not use it. That's cool. That happens all the time. But,
right.
But I think at least thinking about the hogwash, even if you don't agree with that, it might help you change your opinion on something else down the road, you know.
Yeah, you just be a filter, though. Just filter it all through your mind and extract what you need from each situation, each person's contribution. I believe that's a good idea. I mean, I like to – when I put stuff on the forum, I like to hear opposing views, because if everyone just agreed, then what's the point of putting it on the forum, you know?
True.
You know? I mean, that's the whole point of a forum, isn't it? To find people to disagree with what you're saying so that you can learn from it or find out where you went wrong. So I totally agree with you. I don't know. It's just I think there are situations where there's no reason to discuss things too. But I don't know. But we'll see what the forum says.
All right. Well, maybe you'll go to antiupmagazine.com/forum and find the thread and say, yeah, Scott, this is one of those absolutes. There's no one less in this one. And then I would say, oh, but, yes, there is, Chris. And I guess it gets to my final point in this before we move on to the stuff that doesn't drive people crazy in the show. Part of my argument in this particular thread was that when I'm in a freeze-out tournament, all right, and for folks that don't hear the term because no one really says it anymore, it's a tournament where, you know, you can't rebuy.
Right.
Right, once you're out, you're out.
Right. Right.
So it's very different than a cash game where you can always reach into your pocket or reach into somebody else's pocket and get back in, or rebuy where you can peel off another 30 or 50 or 100 and get back in. Freeze out, when you're out, you're out. Okay?
Yep.
So I want to ask you, is there any validity, and this is going to sound like a stupid question, and I'll let you mock me for a little bit before I explain it. Is there any validity to avoiding elimination? Go ahead, mock me, and then I'll explain it.
So, in other words, you you would like me to validate your parking for playing in my poker room. No, don't do that. Why would you want to do that? Go pay the $10 for parking in that stupid garage.
No, so what I mean by that is this whole situation on the forum, and I'm not going to go into the details. People can read it themselves. But essentially, the guy was less than four big blinds. He was on a button, and he was trying to figure out whether he should have pushed all in there or not, right? All right, now obviously there's a good group of folks that say, oh yeah, when you're less than four big blinds and you're on the button, any two cards push.
Right.
You know, you pick up the blinds, it doesn't matter what people have. All right? That's one line of thinking. That's perfectly acceptable. I get it. And then there's another group of people that say, well, it kind of depends, you know, blah, 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 blah. You know, as most things do in poker, depends, right?
Yeah.
And then you'll have a very, 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 very small little ostracized group led by Scott Long.
Group of one.
That's it. Exactly. One now. I'm hoping to recruit two or three, but I haven't got a hold of mom or dad yet. You know what? Maybe that is, you know, hey, you've got, in this case, there are like seven people in the hand. You got five more free looks at cards. Maybe you'll have a better situation to come up. Or you get better cards, you know, maybe you think about not pressing that, even though the math tells you you should. And while the math tells you it should, if you're push it and you're wrong or you're right and you get knocked out, you're still out. You're out of the tournament. And then you can't do anything about it.
Well, how bad of a hand are you talking now? I mean,
well,
you're saying
now,
to do seven.
See, you're going to do what they did on the forum now. They keep going back to talk about that specific hand. And I'm trying to get people not to talk about that hand. I'm talking about the situation. So, no, I'm not going to tell you what the hand is. I'm not going to do that.
I'm sorry. Do we have a segment on our show called Situation of the Week? I'm sorry. It's called Hand of the Week. We have to relate to the hand.
See, now you're getting to the root of everything I'm talking about. Woo!
That's what I'm here for.
I feel like Oprah. Let's take everybody to Australia.
I'm just not going to cry.
But, you know, maybe it should be the situation of the week because, you know, again, the hand does not come back the same thing. But I want to talk about the situations. And I think we do a fairly good job of it on our show. You know, people are like, oh, these guys are – they suck. They don't know how to play poker. Yeah, well, you know, we admit that every week. But by talking about the situation, then you can go out and do what you want to. So, yeah, I think it should be a situational thing.
Yeah, no, I'm just...
Well, let's get back to my specific point is, if you are faced with a positive EV situation, do you take it every day and twice on Sunday?
Yes. If it's a positive EV, that's why it's positive EV.
I get that, all right? I'm not trying to argue with the math here, all right? I get it, and I'm not saying anybody that does that is... silly or stupid or dumb or anything like that. What I'm saying is when I'm sitting at a tournament, all right, and I've got I'm faced with a situation where I have what I believe a positive EV position here where I can put all my chips in and 90 or whatever, 60 times out of 100, it's going to work out for me. Not necessarily going to jump on that because there's 40 times out of it that's not going to happen. And if I'm wrong there, I'm out. And maybe there's a better spot for me to do what I'm going to do, or there's a better strategy for me in that situation.
You mean
and not
like
just to sit there and do the math and, oh, it's positive EV, I'm going to show.
You mean like with pocket fours?
Yes, very good point. Yeah. Have a little fun with the circus here. All right.
I understand what you're saying, but let me ask you this. If I walked up to you tomorrow or Saturday when we play in our home game, and I say, hey, Scott, let's go over here for a couple minutes, and we'll flip coins, and every time you're right, I'll give you a dollar. Every time I'm right, you give me 50 cents. You wouldn't do that all day with me?
That's different. There's no elimination. I could do it all day.
You could eliminate. You could lose all your money.
No, there's no limit to how much money. I'd go out and mortgage my house to continue playing that. But if you want to say, all right, but if you made a qualifier on it that we're going to do this 10 times and or whatever, and if I win most of them, you have to give me your house, Scott. All right, I'm being dramatic now here, but
right,
it gets
right
to my point. You would say, oh, it's positive EV. I got to do it. Fuck.
I got to beep that out now. I don't want to find that in the show.
People are getting me all in a rage. So you would say, in that situation, I don't care about my house. I have positive EV. I'm going to do it. I don't care what the end result, how bad or nasty that could be. It's positive EV, so I'm going to flip these coins with Scott.
No, but you just changed it completely. It's not positive EV when you're giving up your house for a dollar over 50 cents.
All right, so how is it any different than if I'm wrong, I'm eliminated from the tournament and I can't play anymore?
But you have to do something in order to play more.
Exactly.
And what you're doing is the right thing to do. It's the right thing to do.
Oh, but it's not necessarily.
If it's positive EV, it's positive EV. It's right.
Wow.
How is doing the right thing wrong?
Because there might be a writer thing.
A writer?
Yes, and I just created that word, and we're putting it on a PMS t-shirt.
Do the writer thing.
See, this is my problem. You guys are looking at this in a tunnel vision. You're like, all right, all right, Big Blue says that I'm a 60-40 favorite. Got a shove. All right, and I'm not saying you're wrong, but what I'm saying is, hey, you've got five more shots. You might be an 80-20 favorite on another one.
Our apologies to Spike Lee. Sorry, Spike Lee. Do the writer thing.
Do the writer thing. There you go.
You know, I know what you're trying to do here.
Not making decisions in a vacuum in poker. You've got other options.
I understand. I understand, but the whole point of being an educated player and knowing that at this moment you may not get another moment that's this good, so you might as well take this moment because it is positive EV.
Might as well. See, now you're thinking about it. That's what I wanted to get you in the binary.
But it's automatic, though. It's not. I'm just saying it to explain it to you because apparently you need everything explained to you like a little kid. So this is what I'm trying to do. You need to do this because you don't know if you will be able to do it in the next three hands or four hands when the blinds come around again. So that's what I'm saying is even though it may seem robotic and automatic, it's really not, just that we've trained ourselves to know that there's no reason to think about this here. It's positive EV. We're on the button. All we got to do is get through the two blinds. And if we get eliminated, we get eliminated. But if you had pocket aces and you went all in and somebody called you at kings and flopped at king, and what, you'd still are risking yourself. You're not going to fold pocket aces.
Yes, but that's a – if you could do so you're saying there's absolutely no difference between having ace-ace in that situation and seven-deuce in that situation.
Well, maybe not.
There is, and that's what I'm saying.
But you're not going to – you got 220 more hands to wait out pocket aces? You don't.
Well, of course, that's a dramatic thing, but I've got five more hands.
Yeah, five hands, though. The odds of getting a – like, we don't know what the starting hand was. But if your hand was something like king 10, and – because that's what I'm saying. I don't know what the hand is here. We're situation. But if we have better than queen 7, and we know that shoving here is the positive EV situation, no matter, you don't know you're going to get that in the next five hands. You know what I mean? So you got to shove. Because then if you – also, the other problem with your situation is if you're waiting longer, you have more people to have to go through.
All right. See, now this is where we got sidetracked on the fight, on the forum now, because I want more people.
You don't have five more blinds, five more button hands to choose
see,
from.
But see, you're thinking about this the same way my binary bunch buddies are.
Well, because they're smart.
I'm not saying they're not. They're obviously extremely smart.
Okay.
What I'm saying, though, is you guys are focused on winning the blinds. All
hey,
right?
Can we, before we stop, can we make this the main topic today? Because we've already been in like 20 minutes on this thing. We haven't even moved on to the rest of the show. Can we just make this the main topic? Let's do that.
we'll see how long it goes, but yeah, maybe.
Oh, my God. Right, this is embarrassing.
I'm having a discussion here, and even if people don't agree with me, if they take the minute to at least think about what I'm saying, it might help them in a little teensy piece of their poker playing at some point. All right, I'm not trying to convert people to Team Scott on this.
Okay.
All right, but what I'm saying is now we're going to get back to this situation. I'm not going to tell you the darn cards, no matter how many times you ask me.
All right.
But if you're less than four big blinds, my thinking at that point is, and I have a tremendous amount of experience short stacked because I'm terrible. Right.
Right.
Is I am in survival mode there, all right? I've got the little blood of the deer spread on my face, and I'm out there hunting and gathering now, all right? I'm not looking for the positive EV possibilities when I'm tromping through the woods, all right? I want to live. If I'm wrong, I'm dead.
Okay, so let me ask you this. You had mentioned that you wanted more people in the hand. So that's telling me, let's reverse it now. You're the deer running through the woods. You want five guys with shotguns, or you want two guys with shotguns chasing
here's
you?
Here's what I mean by that is, all right, when I'm less than four big blinds, do I want to pick up the blinds? Well, of course I do. All right? That's more chips, and because I'm so short-stacked, it's a higher percentage. Absolutely. All right? I get it. But if I push in that situation, Chris, right?
Right.
And I pick up the blinds, what am I going to have to do on the next hand?
Well, I don't know. It depends on how many blinds, how much his ante's involved and everything else.
Less than four big blinds. Come on. I'm going to have to shove on the next hand, right?
Not necessarily.
Pretty close. Pretty close.
Not necessarily.
Picking up the blinds is only going to make you a little more menacing on the next time. You're still desperate. You're still going to have to press. I mean, you're not going to pick up the blinds. Isn't going to make you all of a sudden 20 big blinds.
All right, I'm going to make you happy here. We're going to marry your thinking with the binary thinking and consider that if you pick up the blinds now and then play the way you want to play, you'll have two full rotations to find a better hand. Because you could steal those blinds. Okay. Since you've already stolen those blinds, Absolutely. Now you'll get two more chances at it.
Absolutely. Makes sense to me. But then, if you get a hand, people are going to say, well, you got to push it. So you're not really, in that line of thinking, you're not really going to pick up anymore. But I'm not going to argue with you on that. What I'm saying at that point is, I am on life support, all right? I'm like the dude in the Monty Python. I've got both of my legs cut off and one of my arms cut off. And I'm good. I'm not dead yet, right?
I think that's At Queen that Mary point, of Scots, but go ahead.
If I just get, like, my ankle back, is that really going to help me all that much? No, I want my whole freaking body back.
Depends. So, you could be an ankle model, and you could make some money on the ankles and then buy back your limbs. You never know. You never know what it's going to do for you until you have it.
I have darn sexy ankles, by the way.
You have a cankle.
So in that particular situation, what I normally do, and again, I'm not saying it's the right way. It works for me. But I would rather take those four or five free hands and hope that I get a hand that plays well multi-pot. Let's say 7-6 suited. And get those five or six callers. So if I win, I'm no longer desperate. I now can play real poker. Now, I admit that is sounds crazy, but if I, you know, I'm desperate. If we're not desperate, it changes everything. When you're desperate, I think you have to think like you're desperate.
Well, let me ask you this. If I'm a panhandler at the exit ramp of life, and I'm begging for food, and a guy goes by with a bologna sandwich and says, here you go,
Oscar,
do I say, nah, you know, I'm going to take my chances with the seven other cars that are coming through the light here, hopefully they'll give me filet mignon. Thanks anyway. No, I'm desperate to eat.
Yes, but you're guaranteed that bologna sandwich. In poker, you're not guaranteed that.
Well, if it's positive EV, it's still...
But it's not guaranteed. There's a huge difference between positive EV and guaranteed. And you're never going to be guaranteed in poker. So,
all right, so what if the guy hands you the bologna sandwich but says, all right, do a dance, and you can't really dance, and he wants you to dance that's a dance that's impressive enough to him?
And then you're like, you know what? Now, you know what? I'm sure there might be somebody that comes behind me that might give me something that doesn't make me dance. Yes, I might say that to the guy. Thanks, but I'm not your toy. I'll wait for a good-hearted soul to come behind me and just put a couple bucks in my jar. Thank you very much. You take your bologna sandwich and go on.
And then I can go
yes,
buy some crack.
Yes, that's my point.
Take my $2
and you're
buy some
saying
crack.
That, no, I'm going to take the bologna sandwich. And yes, I'm going to dance like I've never danced before.
Yeah, you will dance. You'll dance like Selma Hayek.
I'm going to put my lipwarmers on, look like Jennifer Beals, and, you know, because it's bologna sandwich. It's food.
That's right. You will, because when you're that desperate, you will. Believe me, you'll dance. You'll shake your moneymaker, Scott. I understand where you're coming from, but we're talking about poker tournaments here, and I think that the way to survive and win in poker tournaments is to expose situations that you're the favorite in, and you are taking a chance because you're not guaranteed to get a hand in those five hands that you want to wait for, but you are guaranteed a positive EV situation right now, so you have to take it. That's how I feel, whether it's binary or from the gut. That's just how I feel when I play. If I know that this is a positive situation, I have a better than average hand, and I'm only up against the blinds, and I have four big blinds left. Any other thing, too, is the guys in the blinds could have a massive stack and call just to call and get you out. So, exactly. You know, you never know what's going to happen. But they're going to call no matter what you do, whether you have 7-8 or not. And then if you take a chance of 7-8 with five guys behind you and none of them call, and then you get go up against the blind, now the blind, all it needs better than you is 8-9, and you're out. So, I don't know. It's I understand what you're saying. I just think that too many ifs have to come into play for you to survive, whereas I only have one if, and I can keep playing. I don't know. I understand what you're saying. I know what you're trying to do here, but you know, I think math sometimes has to override. I don't know. You're dreaming in the clouds, thinking.
Dreaming in the clouds. All right. Well, you know, my buddy, I appreciate you at least having a decent conversation with me. That good more. I just wanted somebody to listen to me.
I'm the wind beneath your wings.
Oh boy. All right, well, you know, this came into play in Apes because I spent quite a bit of time at the top of that leaderboard. I don't know if you noticed.
Yeah, sort of.
It's kind of nice to see off deadline up there.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, a lot of it came on one hand where I had pocket aces and re-raced a guy, and then he pushed all in. Like 170 big blind raise, and I'm like, okay, cool.
Now, wait, there could have been a better moment there. For you to call.
Right. Yeah, keep mocking me there, Bojangles.
Bojangles.
But yeah, so it was nice. And then, of course, it takes just one hand to destroy it all. When I had the bottom two against the top set, and you particularly enjoyed that hand.
It's you less than 1% to win the hand. You had to make quads to win. That was unreal.
But after that, though, I did not give up. Even though despite all these nitty professor comments people were hurling at me, I was in there raising, taking blinds. But then eventually it didn't work out, and I had to make a stand against you with pocket fours, and of course you had the monster 8-9.
Suited,
by the way. And I think you ended up getting a straight out of it, right?
Yeah, I made a straight on the turn. You know, I do admit that I hate it when you're on my right in these things. And then I knocked you out when they moved you to my left. That was great.
Yeah, that's right.
But I do, because you're always raising, like, when you're coming in, which is fine. That's what you're supposed to play. But it just drives me crazy, you know? I'm just like, all right, well, I know I want you on my right, and I want you to raise, because then when I have the hand, I'll trap you or re-raise you, and you won't believe me, and blah, 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 or whatever it is. But yeah, you're always doing that 9 raise, too, or all those chips. So I started doing it, too. I started busting your balls. I started putting, like, 189 in and making the stacks all these high towers and... but you know, that's, you ever notice when you're playing a tournament, there are those times where it's like an hour away from when the bubble's going to happen, yet you know you're going to be the bubble. You know, I was playing fairly well last night. I made one move that everybody saw and ended up working in my favor. I had 8-10, and you had raised on the button to my big blind, and a guy called your raise, and I thought, all right, I'm squeezing with any two cards here because I have everybody out stacked, and I had 8-10 and shoved, and you folded like I knew you would. And the other guy calls me with king-queen, and I'm like, I'm still 60-40. You know, if I lose, I lose. I'm still – this guy didn't have that many chips, and I knocked him out. That was really the only pure bluffy-type move I made. So I was playing all right all night, but I was winning races early.
That just
tells you that you're going to lose races later. And sure enough, I trapped, or I didn't trap, but I knew full boat flop was going to shove because he had been doing it all night on my right. And I had pocket nines, and I knew he was going to shove with a less than optimal hand, and I was going to call and knock him out. And I had pocket nines, he shoved, I called, he had queen jack. I had pocket nines, and that crippled me because he made a queen on the turn. And so I was crippled. And then the short stack on the bubble goes all in and is crushed pre-flop and turns a straight and doubles up to my stack size. So now I'm like, here it comes. I'm going to be on the bubble. So I shove a couple of times with decent hands, everybody folds. Then I get pocket queens and shove. And full boat flop calls me. And I'm not sure if it was full boat flop on the queen jack hand. It might have been. Oh, no, I think it was Roy, that Roy guy. But full boat flop calls me with ace jack and flops an ace and a jack, and I'm out on the bubble. And it was, like, just so depressing. Man, you know, pocket queens, I start thinking maybe I should have played it differently, you know, but either way, an ace comes on the flop if that happens. Now what do I do? Do I think he really has an ace because he called my raise, or do I shove anyway to the stop and go? You know, so I just thought, you know, I only had an M of like 3.5 there, so I shoved anyway with queens, thinking I was doing the move that you liked, Scott, where no one would ever put you on a premium hand here. They'll think you have something small or like a suited ace or something, when I actually had a monster of queens, and it didn't matter. I still got off flop. So, yeah, I hate that too, because you start to play and you're like, oh, man, I don't want to play in a tournament tonight. I'm cold in the house. I'm freezing, you know. And then I'm like, oh, now I'm doing – now I'm going to make the final table. And out on the vote. God, I hate that. But one thing I noticed was I played in the hand with Turley 11, our friend Tom Turley. And he was in the big blind. I was in the small blind. I limped with, like, suited deuce 5 or something because it was early in the tournament. And I flop a wheel, and I check it, hoping he'll catch up. He checks. It turns another 3. So now I check again. He bets, like, 40. And I think I raise him, but I may call. I'm not sure. And then on the river, I check to him again because it's another 3. So there's 3 threes on board. Now my wheel, you know what I mean, is, like, useless. And he waits forever and then bets like, I don't know, 100. I fold and type in, I flopped an effing wheel. But I spelled out the word I'm not spelling out here.
E-F-F-I-N-G?
Yeah, exactly. And it came up on the actual chat. It didn't get dashed out or little special characters. You know, it actually said the word. I said, hello? Well, how did that not get picked up by the sensors? Then all of a sudden, everybody was typing in all kinds of swears. They were like, oh my God, look at this. And they're typing in all swears and everything. We were laughing. Apparently, I don't know if it has something to do with they make it's private, or if they just gave up on that and said, hey, you should be able, it's the First Amendment, you should be able to do whatever you want. I don't know. But we were able to swear at our table and curse and everything. Did you know that?
No, because I never curse in my life except on the show accidentally.
Well, I thought it was going to dash it out, and I thought it was going to be funny. Hey, look, Chris said something that got dashed out, and it didn't dash out, which made it even more funny.
I was not aware that you could be even more hostile in the chat room now than before. That's good to know. I'm sure a lot of people will really enjoy that feature. All right, well, we want to congratulate Full Boat Flop, who outdueled Turley 11 to win the Nanner. According to news posted on the NANMagazine.com/forum from our folks, it was Full Boat Flop's first Apes event ever, Chris.
Wow. Yeah, I don't remember that name, so that makes a lot of sense.
He's got nowhere to go but down. He can't rebound.
Wow. Well, luckily he flopped an ace on me. Otherwise, I may have taken that banana down.
And it looked like it was about a 60 hand heads up match. I watched a little bit of it, and Turley had taken the lead at one point and then gave it back. So, but congratulations to everybody that made the final table. Rant made the final table, and Jay Dennis, you know, our Uber photographer, and they rocketed it up in the Player of the Year race. And I should mention this. I don't know how often we've mentioned it, probably not enough, but Poker Geek MN is doing amazing work with Apes. Standings and records and all kinds of dadgum cool little bells and whistles. It's really, really impressive what he's been doing. And you can check out that link in the forum. And also, I think I updated the link on our page at andy@magazine.com/apes with that. But kudos to Poker Geek, and definitely check that out if you're in the Apes arena. You're really going to enjoy the stuff that you can search for on there. It was actually pretty depressing for me, though.
Absolutely.
Not a lot.
No, I know. I'm only on there for, like, I think one final table all year, so it's not exactly boasting for me either. But we have one last chance while we wait for Scott to blow his nose.
Yeah, sure.
Our final event is Saturday, January 29th at noon. It is Eastern time, and it's the 8-game mixed, the one that everyone's looking forward to. And, of course, the free roll for that will be Saturday, January 22nd, noon Eastern time, and that will also be 8-game mixed because, you know, you want to practice in the game that you're going to be playing in. So it makes sense. So I'm really looking forward to that one. How about you?
I am, because it's my last chance to get into that Tournament of Champions, which 500 free bucks in the Tournament of Champions.
Yeah, man.
Also 8-game mixed, and I know I am probably 5 of out of 8 against a random any upper, I would think, in the 8-game mix. I'm probably better at 5 of the 8 games.
Okay.
That's going to be my boast for the day.
Obviously, No Limit Hold'em is not one of them.
Of course not. Not even close.
Yeah, okay. Because, you know...
And you know how much I love No Limit Hold'em? In Apes last night, I was watching the standings. Of course, you know, because I was up there. Rant was up there. Another one of our friends that plays every once in a while was up there. Next thing I know, Rant has got like 12,000 in chips.
Yeah.
And the other guy's gone. And then Rant comes to the chat room. Hey, I knocked out your friend. And I'm like, what? So number one, number two in chip leader, got it all in, ace-king versus queen-queen. That only happens in No Limit Hold'em. Come on, guys.
Oh, yeah, it was a 51-49 favorite. Positive EV. I had to go. Yeah, right. Great. Fine. Whatever.
I'll see you at the limit table. Jeez. Golly, jeez. All right, well, we're getting close to needing to announce Ape 6. And we'll begin work on that. And, of course, we've got something that's very intriguing that people are talking about. PokerStars this week, Chris, launched their new home games feature.
Yes.
Allows people to do not just private tournaments, but private cash games. And they put logo on the field, does all kinds of stats and stuff. I hope it doesn't put PokerGeek out of business because I'm sure he's doing better stats.
Yeah.
But naturally, the questions we got in Apes last night, hey, is this going to be our new thing for Annie Up? And our short answer is we would love to, but there's some limitations. Most notably, you can only have 50 people in there, and we have quite a bit more than 50 listeners.
Yeah.
So we will certainly talk to our Stars contacts, see if we can find a bastardized version of home games that we can use for Apes, or if not, something else like that. But we're working with Stars to have a guest come on the show, hopefully next week, if not in the next couple weeks, to tell us a lot more about home games. Not going to spend a lot of time on the show this week because we got a lot of good and I blew like 45 minutes on my craziness.
Yeah, we're already 40 minutes in. We haven't even gotten to the news desk. How about we skip the next item, okay?
That's great. Let's move right on to the news desk.
All right, there you go.
All right, the New Jersey State Assembly voted 63-11 this week to send a bill establishing an online poker apparatus in the state to Governor Chris Christie. If signed, it would become the first intrastate online poker operation in the United States.
This is shocking, Scott. After all, I mean, who names their kid Chris Christie?
I love it. I love it.
Oh, and the news is shocking, too. Wow, that's awesome. That's pretty wild, man. Set the bar and see if everyone follows. Who says we need, you know, Senator Harry Reid to do it for us?
Yeah, there's no word yet on whether the governor supports this or not, but we'll know within 45 days.
Awesome. Okay, Wyoming lawmakers this week will debate whether the state should loosen its poker laws by removing a restriction that players in social games not have a bona fide social relationship in order to play against each other. I always wondered how you'd prove that anyway. Are you bona fide? It reminds me of that Brother, Where Art Thou movie. He's bona fide.
Yeah, you know, chalk it up to lawmakers trying to protect ourselves. And, you know, I don't live in Wyoming. I've probably only driven through it once, and so, you know, it's their state, they can do what they want, but it sounds kind of crazy that you have to, like, you know, oh yes, here's our proof that we are friends.
Can you, after the show, tell me about your trip driving through Wyoming? That's pretty wild.
Well, as a kid, my dad drove me everywhere.
I'd like to hear about that, man. That's pretty cool.
I'm sure I remembered it.
I always forget Wyoming's even a state, never mind that we could drive through it. God.
All right. And finally, according to published reports, MasterCard spent $840,000 in the third quarter of last year to lobby the federal government to change online gaming laws.
Huh. That's interesting.
Granted, it's not a lot. I mean, it's a lot of money to us, but
yeah.
Probably not a lot of money to them on lobbying. But what I find most interesting about this is it was MasterCard and Visa that essentially themselves took themselves out of the online gaming world, even before they were quasi required to by the UIGEA back, because online gambling was right up there with porn as the most chargeback things. You know, where people were like,
what's this charge? I never charged that.
You know, even though he's been playing online for like 4 months, and so it was costing those companies a lot of money. They finally said, you know what, forget it. It's not worth it anymore. But maybe the industry has matured a little bit now, and I think maybe they see some dollar signs there that they didn't before. And if it's, you know, regulated and properly, thing like that, there's probably going to be fewer chargebacks at that point. So
Very interesting.
A lot of money for credit card companies if they're allowed to let people charge their chips.
Yeah, really get interest on your, you know, well, the stack that I bought in for is 100, but the interest is going to be 107. is it a positive EV? Let me ask Scott. All right, so our hotline is 813-448-1120. If you call that hotline and we use it, we'll give you something cool. If we hadn't given you something cool already, this clip comes from Mike in beautiful, perfect weather, San Diego.
Just was listening to Blake's podcast, and I heard the question that somebody called in about the card room in California with the three blinds. And I just wanted to give you my opinion. It probably is to allow the house to get the maximum rake, but not probably for the reasons you think. It doesn't necessarily have to build the pot. In California, almost all of the card rooms have an automatic flop, or the drop is automatic on the flop. So most of the card rooms, it's 4+1. So as soon as they see a flop, they pull that rake in. So if it's just a regular small and a big blind, especially in the small stakes, $1, $2 games, there's a lot of chopping going on because the players know that as soon as they see a flop, they pull the money and there's no money in the pot. So having that third blind in my opinion, eliminates the chop, which means that every hand goes to a flop, which means that every hand has a rake pulled out of it.
See, this is what I like about the animation. They fill in the gaps.
Yes, yes.
They're like, oh, yes. Good discussion, Scott and Chris, but you forgot this, and it brings it all together, and that's perfect.
They're, yeah, like, I mean, they're like the Tampa 2 defense. They fill the gaps. They shoot the gaps for us when we fail to do so.
Well, Mike, that makes perfect sense. You know, and there's nothing worse than playing in these rooms where, you know, as soon as you get the flop, you're right, you look at the pot, and you're like, there's nothing in there anymore. What happened? Obviously, a lot of rooms have kind of changed policies on that, too, so I guess you can choose to go to another room, but good to know, yeah.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
All right, well, Mike, we appreciate you calling the hotline, and we are going to send you a download of the Poker Hand Breakdown Pro Hand History Analysis Program for single or mixed games from element26.net. Email us your address at podcast@indiamagazine.com, and we will get that wonderful prize out to you.
We also have an interesting letter in our mailbag from Everett Rice, and he wants to know how you handle the first few rounds of a tournament until you get a bigger stack.
Never happened.
No, me neither. So we'll fudge our way through this. But he always struggles with it because when he has to fire C bets to the river, it makes him nervous. He says he's had many people stay in a hand till the river till they fold, and he knows they're trying to complete draws. But if they call and win the pot, then one is left short stacked. I don't feel like I can make a move until I at least double up. And then he said, "Thanks for the advice and keep up the awesome work." So Scott, really. You know, I was thinking of this last night. I was looking at the table around me, and we were all pretty decently stacked because it was one of those second tables where most of the people had already been moved. And
okay,
I was still like kind of calculating my M and noticing that we all had precarious M's, but we were all right near the top of the leaderboard. And if you really want to play poker the way you should play it, it's hard to in like online tournaments, especially. So it's a good question. How do you handle the first few rounds of a tournament when you know you got to protect your hand, but you're afraid to make a mistake?
Yeah, this would be a good one where I'm hoping our nation steps up to fill in the gaps because we're going to leave a pretty big gap here. You know, it's something I struggle with all the time. You know, I'm trying to get more aggressive, which I know I need to be. And obviously it's all situational, depends. I'm not going to get into that whole thing. But I find myself, you know, you make that you've got a solid – pre-flop hand, you make your standard 3x raise, you get called, the flop comes, and it's fairly safe for your C bet, so you fire that and get called, and you're like, oh, man. So then at that point, do you shut down and let somebody take it from you, even though you probably still have the best hand, but you don't have enough chips to really to fire again without putting yourself at risk, or do you fire again and hope you get it? And then if you fire again then you might have to fire again on the river, and boom, next thing you know, you're out on a hand that started good but never got better, and you're like, you're sitting there going, what happened?
That's more firing than Donald Trump.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I agree. I think one of the ways to, and he wants to know, like, how do we handle the first few rounds? So I would think that perhaps the first couple of rounds, you got to see how people are playing, and then if the second hand you get ace king though or something, then you just have to play it the way you think you need to know how to play it. I mean, if you make your standard raise and get a caller and you miss the flop, You know, if you're out of position, you know, you need to do your C-bet because you took the initiative on the hand and they don't know you have ace-king. You could have pocket tens. You could have aces. You could have kings. You need to do it. And if they call again, that's when you have to reassess, you know, and then you start putting them on hands. And if you feel like you're beat or if you don't think they're floating, then, you know, then you just shut it down. You know, you got to – you just try to – that's when kind of like you know, Dan Negreanu's small ball comes into play. You know, maybe you just make it 2.5x early on, right, instead of 3 or 4. Some people were making it like 6x last night. And I'm like, yeah, all right, whatever. You're risking so much more than you have to here to get me out of my blind, you know. But that's what I would do. I would maybe just alter how much you're betting and how much you're C-betting with. Sometimes a third of the pot bet will get someone to lay it down because they're just – you know, speculating with their two cards because it's early in a tournament. So, you know, just – but if you can, try to see the way that people are playing first and then adjust after that. That's how I look at it when I first start a tournament.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I'd be interested in what other people say. But, you know, probably the safer thing to do in those situations where the stacks, you know, start with a lot of chips is to, you know, downsize your bets a little bit, even though it may not be optimal long-term, at least initially when you – you don't want to get in a situation where you're committing a lot of your chips on a hand that you really don't want to commit a lot of chips on. And if you have to lay it down, then it's only a small mistake at that point. You've only lost a, you know, a couple hundred or something. And then, you know, as you build it up and you hit ones, then you can start ratcheting it up and playing more optimally at that point.
Yeah, let's face it. When you start in a lot of these online tournaments that are obviously smaller buy-ins because you're listening to our show, because if you listen to our show and had big buy-ins, you'd have a problem. So when you these smaller buy-ins, you know, obviously you only have about 2 or 3 really good hands or opportunities to go to war.
Yeah, yeah. And then you're out. Yeah.
And then you're either out or doubled up. So really pick them wisely and choose your situations carefully.
Yeah, it's kind of like that Price is Right game, right? You know, when you used to put your hand into the bag that Bob Barker was holding there and you pull out a strike.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and you can kind of choose. I mean, once you pulled out 2 strikes, then you got to be really careful. And maybe it's the same thing. You know, the first one, you get a free pass. You try it. If it works, great. If not, then, you know, hey, you're 1 strike down.
I always thought that people were stupid in that game because you could literally reach in there and feel the round disc.
Yes,
and like,
yes.
Feel for the X or feel for the number, you know. But they never did. They were just so giddy with adrenaline that they're like, oh, Bob! And they grab and pull something out. They don't care what they're pulling out. They're on TV, you know. You know, got to think about it. People think.
All right, everyone, we appreciate you sending that email to podcast@antiopmagazine.com. And you're also a previous swag winner, so you'll just have to be happy with that very not quite enlightening advice that we gave you. And everybody else, email us. And if we use it on the mailbag, we might send you something great like a deck of J-Design playing cards from classicplayingcards.com, the official playing cards of Antiop.
Well, it's a sad day today, Scott.
Yes, yes. Well, it's always sad.
It's doubly sad. One, because this will be our final installment of the Ride Along with Columbo.
Mm-hmm.
But it also will be our final installment of 1 Minute Mystery as well. He is going to take a break. And until further notice, Columbo is going to early retirement. And says that he's still looking for a reason to love poker again, but right now he doesn't, and he's pretty much wrapping up his 1 Minute Mystery. So we're sorry to see him go. He's always welcome at the Antiop Nation and on our show, and maybe someday we'll have him back on. But this will be the last Ride Along with Columbo, and the last we'll hear of Columbo until further notice. So, buddy, hope you find what you're looking for, and hope it sparks you to want to do some more, and we'll always welcome you back.
Yeah, he's just been a great part of the show for so long.
I know, it's hard to believe that he's going to be gone, and we are going to miss him, and it's one of the best segments, the most popular segments we have, and it's what gets us talking about strategy, you know, when normally we're just, you know, babbling about some parking garage where a guy thinks you're a racist. So I'm going to miss Columbo for that, definitely. And I suppose we should get into it here. We've made the final table, and we're 7-handed. There are 3 short stacks. We're one of them. We have an M of about 5, which I know doesn't matter to you. and about 325,000 chips. We've posted our 24,000 big blind, and one of the short stacks who has us covered shoves. We have King of Hearts, Jack of Hearts. What do you want to do?
Well, I'm going to get five more free looks, so I'm just going to pass. I don't think we're so desperate here that we need to take a stand here. We have 15 big blinds. I know you got the M and all this other, and your Q and your J and all this other kind of stuff, but 15 big blinds, plenty enough to make people fold if we're the one pushing the action. So I'm much more inclined to put someone else to the test rather than to be put to the test myself with a hand that easily could be dominated. I'm going to fold here and let the nation ridicule me.
Well, luckily, on the final ride-along, I disagree with you. Because it would suck if we agreed. We both just said, ah, fold, and then that was it. That would suck. That would be a terrible way for a one-minute mystery to go out. I have to shove here, or at least call the shove.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you're out if you lose.
Yeah, I have to call it, man. My M is precarious, as Columbo points out. And, you know, even one more orbit. You know, I'm going to be well below the threshold after that if I don't pick up a hand. And as I said in our hour and a half long discussion earlier in the show, the odds of getting a better hair in the hand in the next like five deals is very rare.
Yeah, you're not going to get a better hair than that.
Yeah, no, I already have – my hair is way better than yours, so I don't have to worry about that. Don't even bring Faso into this. You know, he always likes to make fun of my hair, and I'm like, dude, really? You? Anyway – I think we need to shove and pray. King Jack is a pretty damn good hand when you're up against six other players and it's a blind shoving. You know, they could have anything. And even if they have us with an ace, you know, it's likely going to be still like 60-40. So,
all right, I know this is not going to change your mind, but you keep saying shoving. You're not shoving.
I'm calling a shove. Yeah, I know. I'm calling a shove. I know. I'm sorry.
You're not putting any pressure at all on anyone. You're just
I'm calling off all my chips, but I have King Jack suited in a shorthand situation,
you're
and I'm already in the money.
You know, you don't think 15 big blinds is enough to push somebody off a hand later on?
Maybe. But I like this hand. I like King Jack suited in this situation, and I think I'm calling. I'm calling the shove.
Well, you know, this is going to be real disappointing to the forum folks because on the last one-minute mystery right along Columbo, they agree with me. And I know that we're going to get flooded with emails as soon as you post this. Please let Columbo know he's got to do one more so my last one isn't agreeing with that idiot Scott Long.
See, we trapped them, Scott. That was the beauty of it. We trapped the forum. We waited until we knew they would agree with you, and then we cut off their heads.
But no, it was unanimous on the forum that we have enough chips to wait for a better spot, and they said what I said. We don't want to call our hand here, but we're quite fine pushing with King Hearts, Jack Hearts, and we're one doing the pushing, but we're not going to call with it.
Right.
So, us against you, Chris.
I'm not going to be John Kerry and flip-flop here. I'm going to stick with my King Jack call, and I'm not going to say anything to the contrary. That's what I would have done. That's what I'm going to do. And, this is it. Our last trip with Columbo, we're pulling into the station. We're getting ready to get out of that special parking space and call it a career. Let's see what happens.
Welcome back. Well, King Jack suited against an all-in shove from another short stack. Pretty common situation. And really, despite the fact that we're really frustrated and we're running short of chips, I got to think about this. If my M was higher than 5, I think I could get away with this pretty easy. But because it's 5, I'm literally going to flip a coin. I think to myself, if I was him and I was dealt my hand, or maybe slightly more or slightly less than his hand, would I shove? The answer is no. And I think I should fold here, despite my M. And yet...
Some would say that pastrami is a more interesting meat than salami, and they would also be incorrect, sir.
Yeah, I'm rambling, that's right. And I'll tell you why. Because I made this call and I hated myself for doing it. Our other player flips over, ace of clubs, queen of spades, and we have what's basically a race from behind. The flop, turn, and river don't help us, and he wins with ace, queen, high. And we go out of the tournament 7th. This was a really good run, a really deep run into a tournament, but by and large, as I go back and play the hands, I could have played it so much better. And that's the thing to take away from this, if you're going to take away anything.
Hey,
it's important to realize just because you went deep does not mean there's not a ton of room for improvement in your game. Colombo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com signing off.
Remember, Sven, our friendly Poker Stars Porsche dealer? Sven's still very excited.
Yeah!
He already knows that Poker Stars players together earn enough VIP points to redeem 5 Porsches every day. What's made him a little more excited is the fact that 5 of our Poker Stars players have already claimed these lovely pieces of German engineering. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to have left all the other schemes, well, stuck in neutral. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
Well, from one of our saddest moments on the show in history to one of the greatest moments, I have been waiting for this moment. I have been waiting all week for this show, Scott. I have to admit, we even had a chance maybe to interview someone today instead of doing this show. And I was like so hoping the interview would fall through because I wanted to do this as soon as possible. I am so excited that we are going to actually talk about a Rounder sequel.
Yes, 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 indeed.
You know, we talked about it a little bit before in one of our news items. Miramax and the Weinstein Company announced that they're going to bring a sequel to Rounders to the screen. And it's been like 13 years since McDermott got into that cab headed the series, right? I mean, it's been a while. And of course, no reliable details on the script have been announced, but we did ask the Ante Up Nation to write their own treatments for producers to consider. And, you know, we took 3 of the best ones and, we're going to use them on the show today. But of course we have our own because as you so eloquently put it, we have yet to make our first million. So why not take a stab at writing an Oscar worthy story, right?
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure mine's at least going to be a raspberry.
I would love to be nominated for a raspberry.
but we got some good ones here from our folks, and I really enjoyed reading them, and I think our folks are going to enjoy them as well too. And you know, Chris, we're going to have to get ourselves in the right frame of mind here, right?
Yeah.
Because I a little faster was sitting on my shoulder going, no one likes to hear you guys read on the show. There's nothing worse than listen to you read and fumble through something on the show. All right, so we don't have any other way of communicating this kind of information, so we're going to have to be dramatic in our storytelling. We're going to have to be books on tape quality, buddy.
So do you want to be Betty White or do you want me to be? And one quick note, too, you know, this is going to take a while, and we've taken a while already. We've done a lot of analysis on the show already, so we're going to skip Hand of the Week this week. And so a lot of them are going to shut off the show right now, I'm sure. But we're gonna pick up Hand of the Week next week just because we really want to give this the proper, quote, treatment. Pardon my pun.
Nice pun.
Thank you very much. So how do you want to start, Scott? You want to start reading them first?
Yeah, I'll go ahead. I'll read
you
the
sure?
first.
Okay.
All right. First one is what I call the appetizer on our Rounders menu. Short
okay.
but sweet. but, you know, it's going to make us more hungry.
Okay.
All right. Comes from Mark Wittig. And here is his Rounders too, Chris.
All right.
Mike is living in Panorama Towers.
Ooh.
As a part-time poker dealer and mid-stakes grinder.
Ooh.
He bubbled the final table in 1998, but hasn't played well online and can't get through the big fields, so he plays mostly cash games. Worm tracks him down and wants a job dealing, so he can help a few people that he owes money to get paid off. But finds out that he can't beat the automatic shuffler. Dag on it. And gets banned from dealing in any room. He asks Mike to stake him in the big game in Ivy's room, but instead Mike gets backers for the main event, but gets into trouble when Worm's friends make him chip dump to them or steal chips from smaller events and pass them to him in the main event, and he won't do it.
Oh, God.
And scene.
Isn't it just like Worm to do that, man?
Worm, he's just, you know, he's just bad news, man.
All right, nice job.
I wonder if Mark had a producing credit on Tilt.
Yeah,
sounds awful like
stealing
the
chips.
Matador, right?
Yeah. But I did like that he brought up Panorama Towers. I mean, that's a lot of insider stuff there, and I'm glad he knew that. That was cool. Oh, man. Okay, well, our next one, which I guess would be the salad, maybe? I don't know. Yeah. The salad course, but this comes from D.C.
And, that's all, just D.C. Call
him
D.C. Tell us where he's from.
Yeah. It's his name and where he's from. So he says, Mike McDermott, of course played by Matt Damon, chases his dream of playing the World Series of Poker main event. Now we cut to an online HendonMob.com webpage of McDermott, and it shows a six-figure score in the World Series main event that year. However, then we scroll down or up, depending on where you find it, to find a series of min caches, $100 buy-in entries, and the like. You see, Mike has fallen on hard times again. Crappy No Limit Hold'em has not been kind to him. Poker leaks, life leaks, variants, you name it. So Mike is moping around Vegas tournaments one day, trying to scrape up a stake from anyone he can ask. Sorry, Mike, is the repeated refrain. Even Johnny Chan says, sorry, Michael, I don't remember where I put my wallet.
Yes, nice one.
Various poker players tell stories about Mike playing video poker and whoring up comps and coupons with Alan Kessler, playing craps with T.J. Cloutier and sports betting with Alan Boston.
See, I like the new Mike, man.
Even rooming with Eskimo Clark. Ew! Man, I love it when our poker fans are like educational and know about all of these things that we know. This is absolutely hilarious. But Mike now has next to nothing. Not even a bracelet to pawn. We even cut to Jean Robert Ballon looking at Mike disdainfully saying, wow, that guy is busto. Fed up with all of this, Mike drunk dials his ex-girlfriend, Joe, which will make Scott happy. Gretchen Mol is back in the movie.
I do this every night.
He dejectedly pours his heart out, sobbing and broken. She hangs up on him. Then, seemingly out of the blue, mentor and fellow rounder Knish, yes, John Turturro is still around, texts Mike and offers to call him. He tells him by phone that he has an inside track on a gig that can make him enough money, but he's got to be smart about it. There's one condition. Worm, yes, Ed Norton, he is back after dumping Selma Hayek like an idiot, is forbidden from being involved. Reluctantly, Mike agrees. So the plan involves Mike having to travel to Kanish's baller villa in Costa Rica. Somehow, I don't think Kanish has a baller villa, but that's all right.
He's been grinding for a long time.
Yeah, the last 13 years, he's killed his wife, so he doesn't have to pay the alimony. Now he says, here, Mike, I live like a king. There they play high-stakes PLO games with the likes of Umberto Brenes and the Brenes brothers. After the fun and festivities, Kanish takes Mike to a secret location where he explains the plan. He wants Mike to become a super user for one of the most popular online poker sites in the United States called Ultimate Wager.
Yes.
It turns out that they need someone of Mike's skill to head up the team of cheaters, random number generator riggers, online bottom deck dealers, river spoilers, card peekers, coolers, and bad beat generators.
Awesome.
Most important of all is the dreaded Doom Switch. It's that sudden run bad of unsuspecting players who recently withdrew money online. Mike does not like the idea of joining this team of evil, but is fascinated. Then he's introduced to the principals. To his surprise, the mastermind behind the entire operation is Teddy KGB. Malkovich brings his terrible accent.
Now, so far we've got the entire cast back.
Yes, that's awesome. It's going to cost a fortune to get this
movie
played,
DC. Yeah.
And, of course, Teddy KGB says, we meet again, Mike. Let's rig some cards.
Now, was that Teddy KGB or is that the count from Sesame Street?
One bet. Two bets in my belfry. All right. So then, hell's no, Mike protests.
Hell's no. I love it.
Poker is a game of skill. Laughing and chomping on Oreo cookie, Teddy KGB tells Mike that the operation is already in place and will happen whether he's involved or not. In fact, it is too late for Worm. Teddy KGB opens a trap door, and Mike sees his old friend Worm. Somehow he's already wormed his way back in, and Mike sees him as a super in the super user sweatshop as he is pulling the Doom Swish on some unsuspecting player. You see, Worm has let this get to his head, and they are close to being discovered. They need a level-headed Mike to manage this team, so the cheating is done smart. Understand? Mike hates this idea. He confronts Worm, but it is of no use. Mike's only recourse is to grab the encryption key and incriminating files from the room and run as fast as he can. With lightning speed, Mike grabs it and bolts out of the room. As he does so, the chase scene begins. Through the jungles and rainforests of Costa Rica, Mike runs, and Teddy KGB and his armed henchmen follow. Twists and turns. Close calls. Near misses. Mike escapes. He brings the encryption key and incriminating files to 1+1 poker forums, which publicize Ultimate Wager's evil deeds to the world. The company collapses and fails. But, in a twist of fate, the USA has no jurisdiction over the Costa Rican company, so there is no recourse against Knish, Teddy, and Worm. Back in the good old USA, the land of the free, in comes Petra. Oh my god, he even got Famke Janssen to come back.
Awesome.
She embraces Mike and professes her love to him. They briefly discuss federal regulation, state regulation, and such. Eventually, they laugh it off. Fair regulation is just a pipe dream, they say. Mike resolves to be a live cash game player only. And when he and Petra enter the poker room, they lead the entire room in a chant. Let's play Raz! Let's play Raz! And then he says, the ultimate irony of ironies is that Raz is a game that has not been approved yet by the New Jersey Casino Commission. Fade to black, credits.
All right, wow, there was a lot of action there. You know, this, you know, we talked about the fact that to really make this movie work, they got to put butts in the seats. It's got to be exciting enough to people that don't know a spade from a heart.
All right.
But at the same time, be true to the story for poker players. And so I think he's got the little action thing going on, the little Bourne supremacy.
That's right.
Matt Damon in here.
Somewhere in there he's going to say, Petra, I know that the guy in the one seat is the easiest guy to bluff. I know that if I bet the pot here, that how do I know these things and not know my name?
Oh man! But you know, a couple things I got to point out here. One, I'm a Knish fan. I like the Grinder dude. I don't like the fact that he's a bad guy in this. I don't want him to turn evil.
Okay.
I'd rather Mike turn evil than Knish.
Well, Mike considered it though.
You know, yeah, but then he grabbed the encryption key and went off on the daring chase scene. And the other thing, come on, Teddy KGB running through the... Come on, that's why he has the henchmen. It should be Grandma out there, right?
Well, maybe Teddy KGB is just driving the, you know...
Oh, yeah, like the big four-wheel drive.
Yeah, the olive drab, you know.
Yeah, okay. All right, that works.
I'm glad that he spent that much thought on it, too. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, a lot of detail there. All right, our final of our submitted ones before we get to the lesser ones that you and I wrote.
The opuses that we wrote, probably.
All right, this one goes over our good friend Father Paul. You know, and we can't say this enough. Father Paul, he's out there. He's ministering to tomorrow's youth, or today's youth, I guess. Tomorrow's adults.
Tomorrow's adults, today's youth, yeah. Otherwise, he's walking around talking to a lot of pregnant ladies.
He's on the treadmill working out. And he's playing poker, he's writing books, and he's writing movie treatments. Multi-talented.
I think he thought of this one while he was on the treadmill.
Probably. All right. Well, here's what Father Paul's Rounders 2 is. It's 2010, and we need some history on what has happened to Mike. After going to Vegas, he bought into the World Series of Poker for one stack of high society. And grinded out the early rounds to make it fairly deep, only to go card dead and not have some bluffs work. Eventually shoved with ace 10 off. Very nice. Only to run into ace king by Phil Hellmuth, who was out one off the bubble as Phil berated him. Not wanting to go broke again, he made his way through some tournaments and grinds his way at 6-12 limit.
Nice.
All right, that's my boy.
Yeah.
But he still hasn't made it big. He needed to supplement his income, so he took a job doing sports beat writing for the Las Vegas Journal, covering UNLV. Ooh, Rebels. Starting with volleyball, but working his way up. When senior editors find out about their past, when the poker boom hits, they ask him to do a podcast that gains a national following, makes them well-revered in the world of poker. But get this, Chris. They hunger for more.
Oh, of course they do.
Who the they is at this point, right? It's just Mike, right? Is he got,
right now,
like,
I think it's
myself
Mike,
and Irene,
yeah.
Or something? The Jim Carrey recast? All right, Worm joins him. All right, hey, now we're at the day.
Yeah, yeah.
Now Worm joins him. All right, Worm joins him, and they worked at the Journal, too, for a while, but had a hard time with old ways. He got out of printing credit cards and was desperate for quick cash, so he tried to sell drugs. Knowing his thing was on, though, he got tips on how to spot cops while doing his time. He dumped his drugs off on a talkative poker player who was busted in his place. This close call caused Worm to try to find a clean job, and while he still plays some on weekends, he's at the Journal with Mike. I just can't see Worm with the press hat.
Yeah, it's tough to see Worm at a desk.
Points for creativity, though.
Yeah, it's interesting.
All right, part of the writing gig entails a weekly home game. The old reporter, Mike Fasilozovich, runs it and has a bit role in the film, warning them not to jam pots or play over their head. Because Mike and Worm are always talking about the old days and getting back. He warns them that you can't lose what you don't put in. Just like Mike Fasilich. But much like Bill the Bartender and Piano Man, the job is killing Mike and Worm. They decide to take a shot at the 2010 World Series of Poker. Each grinds his way through the early and mid-level rounds. Worm busts out in 159th place after some decent play, but Mike gradually builds the stack back up. He knocks out Doyle Brunson, ironically, with 10-deuce. When he flops two pair and Doyle's jacks don't improve. Mike the Mouth gets busted just short of the final table and breaks down and cries. The final table is intense. And it comes down to Phil versus Mike again. They go back and forth like gladiators. Until Phil gets 9-9 and raises. Mike looks down at ace-10, the hand from the past. Flop comes down, 9-deuce-10. Mike wants to trap, Phil wants to trap, so he checks. Mike senses weakness and bets out, and Phil decides a smooth call.
It's always a smooth call when you're ahead.
The turn is an ace. Oh, no! Phil no longer wants a slow play, so he bets a quarter of his stack. Mike re-raises all in, and looks like it's all over until the ace comes on the river. Mike's dreams are realized. After the big win, rather than go on tour, he and Worm decide to start their own magazine called Chip Up. And continue their podcast while playing in some tournaments and always having a good story to tell. With their winnings, they are also able to help two old friends of the Las Vegas Journal realize their dream of having an 80s themed bar on the strip.
Oh my God.
And scene.
Something tells me I've seen that movie before. Oh, that's pretty funny.
Wow, even worked in the Stuck in the 80s guys.
Yeah, even got in his favorite Stuck in the 80s guys. Unbelievable. Wow, that was great, Father. That was awesome. I should just call him Paul, right? He says it sounds weird when I call him Father on the show. So.
Yeah, but I like the Father Paul.
Yeah, me too. That was great.
Mike Fasilovich likes him too.
All right, here's the big question. Who goes first, me or you?
Hey, I just finished reading. I need to parch myself with a little Pabst here. So.
Okay, everyone, kick back with a brew and enjoy the ride. This is going to be pretty long. All right, ready? Here's my sequel to Rounders. The red LED light of an office phone blinks, but the ringing can only be heard faintly at the receptionist's desk, which can be seen through the glass door of the room as the camera scans from left to right. The sound of typing on a computer fills the room, but is interrupted by a young man's voice on the intercom. "Someone named Mike McDermott is online too for you, ma'am. He said you would know what this was all about." At that moment, the camera stops its panning and focuses on beautifully manicured nails just as they stop typing. Then the camera slowly works its way up to see the almost smirking face of Joe, the blonde who dumped him 15 years earlier.
Ooh, I'm having hot flashes.
A plane lands at McCarran Airport. Joe walks through the gate with someone in tow, and they catch a cab to Clark County Jail. McDermott comes to the visitor's area in the standard orange jumpsuit, looking almost as bad as he did when those stadies roughed him up back in Binghamton. He picks up the two-way phone and says, "I'm in deep." At that moment, we see Joey Knish on the other end of the phone. He made the cross-country trip with Joe to give her some guidance through the Vegas underbelly. With Joe sitting next to him, Knish says, "You know, Mike, it seems like I've heard you say that before." That's when it fades to black and Rounders 2 flashes on the screen.
Oh my God, we're just in the opening credits now?
Yeah, the opening credits. Turns out McDermott gave up his dream of winning the main event after flaming out 5 straight years. So, under an alias and an offshore account, he has started an online poker site called Chesterfield West. But he borrowed money from guys who make Teddy KGB look like Bruce Jenner. That's when Knish tells McDermott that Teddy died from surgical complications after he went in to get some toes amputated due to onset diabetes.
Too many Oreos, Knish says. They start laughing when an annoyed Joe grabs the phone from Knish and explains just how serious these charges are. Turns out a prevailing Republican Congress had ramped up its crusade against online poker and made it so that every dollar earned by online operators would mean one day in prison if convicted. Mike is staring at 8,957 consecutive life sentences. Then Knish asks him, "How'd you end up here?" And Mike says, "I was set up." Turns out someone had hacked his site and dumped all of the players' funds into an offshore account, including the rake. They also alerted the feds to Mike's true identity. So now Mike not only has no way to repay his underworld investors, who, by the way, have the last name of Corleone, but 70,000 players are now looking for their bankrolls to be replenished. In the next scene, we see a somber McDermott in a suit and tie in a courtroom as the judge is lenient. Yes, it's Martin Landau, who relocated to Vegas when his wife died and now is doing, normal judge work.
Hey, he killed his wife off?
No, if she died. He didn't kill her.
You killed her off. He was alive until you started writing.
But he sentences Mike to 10 years probation, and as part of his sentence, he must play poker every day wearing an ankle monitor to try to repay his patrons who he duped out of all that money.
Rip from the headlines.
This is when we learn the true reason for Knish flying out to Vegas. He will manage Mike's bankroll and put him on a plan. Joe had worked out this deal ahead of time, unbeknownst to Mike. Knish says, "Finally, you'll learn to use the playbook I put together for my beats." Then we get into a little montage of Mike grinding it out at Bobby's room, Ivy's room, and in Larry Flynn's home game. All the while, Joe investigates who set Mike up. Knish tells Mike he needs to enter the World Series of Poker main event one last time because it is believed 10,000 players were expected and first place would pay $20 million, just enough to pay back the players, the investors, and after taxes it will leave him with 3 stacks of high society. Another montage happens. Mike busting people.
Two montages in your movie.
Yes, yes. He's showing bluffs, showing the nuts. Eventually he makes it to the final table, second in chips. And who's the chip leader? Johnny Effin Chan. But it's a November 9, so we have nearly 4 months to investigate who framed Mike. Joe cashes in some favors and ultimately finds out the hacker is discovered to be a former felon who served time with, wait for it, Worm. Yes, Lester likes to hold a grudge. Joe gets Worm charged with all kinds of things back in New York, and Mike is flown there as a star witness for the prosecutors. There's a huge scene between Mike and Worm where Worm screams at him for dumping him in Binghamton. "I had to hitch 5 hours back to the city. Those Russian idiots from Petra's place saw me. They picked me up on the GW and kicked my ass for 2 hours. They'd probably still be kicking my ass now if they didn't have to interlope some stupid tournament free roll called Apes." Mike gives him that "you'll never change" speech, and Worm says he had help framing Mike. Mike says, "Yeah, I know. He was your cellmate." Worm says, "No, not him. It's much deeper than that." And then Worm bangs on the door and says, "Guard!" Just as the guard opens the door, Worm says, "You shouldn't spread lies, Mike. It always catch up with you." And then he disappears behind the door. Mike rolls his eyes and leaves. Now it's time for November 9. And after yet another montage of monster hands and eliminations.
Three montages.
I went for the hat trick. It comes down to Chan and Mike. There's a raising war preflop. And Mike finally just calls. He has the Cosenza. And Chan has 3-8. The flop comes 9 high, and both players miss. Chan shoves, but Mike has him covered. As Mike ponders his action, Chan pipes up and says, "I've been waiting for this for 20 years. Mike says, "What's that, John?" Chan says, "You've been telling people for years that I laid down a limit hand to you in AC for one more bet. Who in their right mind would believe that?" Mike says, "Knish bought it." Chan says, "That figures. Knish knows all the angles, but he never has the stones to take one." "Well, I do. That's why I helped Worm frame you. You don't screw with the reputation of a world champ." That's when Mike leans back and says, "You know, John, you're right. So I guess I'll just have to beat you on the level this time. I call." He turns over ace-10, and Chan sheepishly shows his rags and doesn't improve. Now we cue the inspirational music as Mike is bombarded by friends and fans. The music quiets, and the classic McDermott voiceover starts. "In poker, you can only bluff for so long. Eventually, you have to lay your cards on the table and face the music. Sure, I lied about Johnny Chan. But just like in poker, I needed to bluff early on to set him up later when I had the nuts. And everyone knows Ace 10 is the nuts. End scene.
Wow.
Wow, that was almost longer than our opening discussion.
Yeah, I was waiting for the intermission. I guess I never got it.
This isn't The Godfather.
Brought all the characters back, too, for the most part.
Yeah, yeah. I left my favorite out, though, Famke. I don't know why I did that.
Oh, yeah, no Petra for you.
Yeah, well, in the rewrites, I'll get her back in, you know.
Yeah, all right. Well, you know, we got a Rounders 3 we got to plan for, too. So,
that's true.
Can't shoot her a wad in one movie here.
Oh, man. Oh, my God.
All right. Here is mine.
Okay. I'm already laughing.
Mike makes it to Vegas, and even though first place doesn't have his name on it, 20th place does in the 1999 World Series of Poker main event. Unfortunately, it's before the moneymaker boom of 2003. Still the era of the same five guys making the final table, the luckiest guys in the world. So instead of $1 million, he pockets less than $30,000. I did real research on this, too, by the way.
I figured you did.
But he's proven he belongs there and posts a string of solid, if not life-changing, cashes and becomes a fixture on the Vegas poker scene. He even makes enough to start his own trucking company, giving down-and-out players a solid income while they get back on their feet. But Mike's no grinder. He sees all the angles, but he has the stones to take advantage of them. So after Moneymaker's inspiring victory, Mike is approached by Petra, who's moved on from the Chesterfield to more exciting ventures. Like online poker.
Oh, man.
She knows that Mike, with his movie star good looks, cheerful disposition, and friendship with fellow poker player Ben Affleck, is the perfect poster boy to promote the new site she's been recruited to promote. Mike immediately sees the potential and signs on. Fueled by the confidence that his new fame brings him, Mike bluffs Greg Raymer off of pocket queens. Seriously, have you ever seen somebody fold pocket queens at the final table of the World Series of Poker main event? I never have. Bluffs him off of pocket queens at the final table of the 2004 main event and goes on to become the world champion. Life is grand for Mike now. He even lands a lucrative endorsement from Bombay Gin. And he's the toast of the poker world. I knew I'd screw my own up. And he's the toast of the poker world. Until word leaks that players suspect being cheated on the site Mike represents. The allegations are easy to squash until associates of a high roller, identified only as a major shareholder in Nabisco's Oreo division, start rumbling about him losing millions of dollars in heads-up matches. Mike finds himself in the worst kind of trouble with the worst person. He jests off to an unnamed Central American hamlet to dig deeper into the scandal. I have no chase scenes. I need to work a chase scene in here.
I didn't either.
When he reaches the ramshackle strip mall office that's home to the online site's operations, he's shocked to see the one person he never wanted to see again. Worm. After blowing town, after getting roughed up in the cops game, Worm honed his mechanics on three continents before settling here in the infancy of the online poker era. Despite making a handsome living the honest way, he couldn't help himself, Chris. Couldn't help himself. When he sees an advantage, he takes it. And he rigged the computer so he could see his opponent's whole cards. It started small, you know, like it always does. Until one day, Worm noticed some big money splashing the pot on the site. The whale? Screen name Teddy KGB. And Worm went to town on him. Now, the whole world hunting Worm down, Mike is the only man who can save him. That's probably going to be the tagline.
Yeah.
You know, with, like, the guy that does the little commercials.
Yeah.
Now, with the whole world hunting Worm down, Mike is the only man who can save him. See? Pretty good.
Sounds good, man.
All right. Mike calls in a favor to an old friend, Joe, who's even hotter than she was when she folded the losing McDermott hand 7 years ago. I mean, seriously, this woman looks just like Gretchen Mol, and you know how hot she is. Joe's done well for herself, becoming a successful corporate attorney, and more importantly, has a high-powered husband, the United States Attorney General. probably played by Bruce Willis. You know, he sometimes plays that role.
Oh, man, he's like 80 years old.
Oh, yeah, of course. But, you know, you need to have that husband that's a little older than the wife, you know, to make it work.
Yeah, yeah.
It's Hollywood, right?
Yeah.
Seduced by Mike's ever-present charm, Joe talks her hubby into extending a plea deal to Worm. If he returns to the States and testifies to what he knows, he'll can enter the witness protection program. Mike convinces Worm that this is the right play, and they land in Las Vegas. Only to find it was a setup, Chris.
Oh, no.
He couldn't have seen that coming.
Oh.
The Attorney General, looking for a big score to boost his presidential ambitions, locks Worms up. Locks Worms up? Locks Worm up. Probably should have said he throws away the key, but that's kind of cliche, right?
I think all of our treatments are cliche.
He locks Worm up. And perhaps even worse, Grandma is at the airport. Not Grandma, but Grandma.
His grandmother's there.
Perhaps even worse, Grandma's at the airport. And when the dust settles, lets Mike know that he has 30 days to get Teddy all the money Worm weaseled out of him. Or else. See, I haven't written one of these before, but I know the or else leaves a lot of open-ended and sounds pretty damning. So you say or else, you don't have to actually add anything more.
Oh, my God.
Mike has only one play left, Chris. He has to win the World Series of Poker. No one has won back-to-back main event titles since Johnny Chan. But Mike isn't discouraged by that. I mean, after all, Chan is the kind of player who folds to a fifth bet when it only costs him a napkin to see the whole hand. So really, what kind of player can he be? Mike goes to buy in, but finds that the Attorney General, jealous of Mike and Joe's past, has frozen Mike's bank accounts, forcing Mike to turn to the one person he can always count on, Professor Petrovsky. That's like the second line, you know, because when you go to the movie and they do the previews and they always have like that second line when it comes back up.
Yeah.
Yeah, forcing Mike to turn to the one person he can always count on, Professor Petrovsky.
If it has to be tonight, it can only be 10.
Hey, don't ruin the rest of my treatment. The professor is retired now, and despite hosting a successful daytime courtroom reality show. His wife is alive and well, by the way. He can only afford to give Mike $10,000 if it has to be tonight.
Sorry, buddy.
Like 10 seconds ago somewhere?
I'm sorry.
Peanut gallery, I tell you. Mike finds one of those check-cashing stores open all night that don't require any form of identification and has $10,000 just hanging around to give to a kid for a third-party check. And he just barely makes it into day 1D, even though many other top pros like TJ Cloutier were shut out. Mike skillfully works his way through the field until he makes the final table. Who else makes the final table? That's right. Theodore Crocky Grandma Baryshnikov. Teddy KGB. It's a twist only possible in Hollywood. No, seriously. Joe Hashem and Steve Daneman were forced by producers to chip dump four-handed. But don't worry, they were given executive producer credits and a couple of Rounders 2 t-shirts, so it's all good. And the heads-up match is set. Mike versus Teddy. Once again, for all the cookies. That's going on the poster.
For all the cookies.
But no more Mr. Conservative for Mike McDermott in this match. No, no, Chris. Too much is on the line. He's not checking all night. He's in there raising, re-raising. And when it comes down to the pivotal scene, Mike has Teddy covered by one chip and is facing the call of his lifetime. That's like the sixth great line there.
Man, you should write for Hallmark.
Maybe, yeah. He's facing the call of his lifetime. Mike notices that Teddy, confident as always, licked his right ring finger after eating his French fry. That's odd, Mike says to himself. When he has strong hands, he usually licks his left index finger.
I'm waiting for a Tiffany Michelle reference here somewhere.
That's it. It's subtle, buddy. Come on. I don't like to hit people over the head with a hammer. I got to think a little with my treatments.
Okay.
Mike adds it up, makes the call, and Teddy flies into a rage. How can you call that? Unreal! Unbelievable! And Mike's done it. He's back-to-back world champ. He gives Teddy the $7,490,000 that Worm took from him, saves $10,000 to pay back the professor, He's only going to charge 2, maybe 3 points on his loans in the future. He's just giving his money away.
I know. What the hell?
Ridiculous. Mike says Worm, as always, can fend for himself. And it turns out he can. In a wicked game of poker in the big house, Worm steals enough SIGs to buy his freedom from a guard.
Jeez.
And the movie closes with Mike's new signature line. First prize at this 2006 World Series of Poker is $12 million. Does it have my name on it? I don't know. But I'm going to find out, Jamie Gold. And scene.
Oh, man, it's remarkable how similar our treatments were, isn't it?
Well, you got to get online poker in right now. You got to update it, right?
I know. It's remarkable.
My real weakness is it's still in the past.
Yeah.
I should have let him grind it out for a little bit there. But I wanted him to have success when he first got out there.
I know. The eternal optimist.
Yeah, he gets out there and he's discouraged. The next thing you know, it's not about poker anymore. He's moved on to backgammon or something boring like that.
Oh, man. Well, you know, it was great of all of our listeners to send in what they did and take some time to do it. Really appreciate it, helping us make the show. That was a lot of fun. I at first started, I was like, oh, man, this is going to suck. And then all of a sudden, I started clicking and I started writing. It was a lot of fun to do.
It was cool.
Yeah,
actually, I feel like fleshing it out a little bit.
You know, I think you and I should get together and really put our stories together and really flesh one out and really submit it and see what we could do with it.
Put some meat on those bones.
Yeah. Hey, what the hell? Damon did it with Affleck. You and I could do it. I don't think we're going to win any Oscars, but we might get $25,000 for a treatment. Oh, man. Well, nice job, buddy. That was a lot of fun.
Nice job right back at you. Nice job to our three folks that we used on the show. We appreciate all their time and effort as well, too. We'll give them, dolly grip or key grip credits or something.
Key grip. We can pick up. And also, of course, I want to thank Colombo for his dedicated service to the Antiup Nation. And really hope he comes back. Really hopes he finds what he's looking for in poker and comes back stronger than ever. And if not, it was great having him on, and I consider him a friend.
Absolutely. And remember, we'll bring the hand of the week back next week. Send your hands to podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and you could win great stuff like a t-shirt from PMS Pokerware.
Absolutely. And
which will be our official marketer of Scott and Chris's Rounders 2 treatment t-shirts.
And, of course, Do the Writer Thing will be available on site soon. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.